My name is Steve Reich, and W2C 9/11 is a piece largely made of documentary recordings of fire department in New York City, the air traffic controllers, and friends and neighbors of mine. I think in late 01 or early 02, somebody was interviewing me and said, oh, by the way, do you plan to do a piece about 9/11? Because they knew about my use of documentary materials to make music. And I said, to tell you the truth, I said, we're working on ending Three Tales now. It involves a lot of sampling. I just come out of the cave, which involves a lot of sampling. If I see one more sample, I'm going to get sick. So I just need to take a real long break. And so I have no plans to do anything with 9/11.
Total silent. Silent.
In late 2009, early 2010, the phone rang. It was David Harrington. And he said, as I recall the conversation, would you write us a new piece and would you use pre-recorded voices? And I said, you know, quickly, David, for you, anything. Because I love Kronos. Every time I work with them, it has really brought something really good to life.
Everyone was running. Screaming.
I had one idea only, and that was a totally abstract, structural, musical idea. And that was that whoever was speaking about whatever they were speaking about, their last syllable would be prolonged. So it came from Boston, and the N would go on indefinitely because I had some software to do that, and that could be doubled by a viola or by a fiddle or by a cello. And then the next person will speak, coming to L.A. And you start building up these textures of what the memories or the vapor trails, like what people had said, and connect them harmonically. The first movement of WTC 9/11 is the air traffic controllers and the fire department, the event itself on the day it happened. And it has a grittiness because of the nature of the recordings and an intensity because of the people and the situation they found themselves in, which is, you know, humanity in an extreme situation.
Go ahead. Plane just crashed into the World Trade.
The second movement is talking to my friends and neighbors 9 years after this happened, and I'm recording them on a good portable digital recorder, so the quality of the sound and the tone of their voice is very, very different. It's reflective.
I was sitting in class four blocks north of Ground Zero.
I was taking my kids to school.
The third movement is rather different. When 9/11 happened, I just was reading the paper, and there was an article about women from Stern College, which is on Lexington and 30th Street, right near NYU Hospital, where the medical examiner's office was and where the bodies, such as they were, because if you remember with 9/11, most of the bodies were not available for burial. And it turns out something that, as I had returned to Judaism back in the 70s, I just never knew, called sitting shmira, which means that there's a law in Judaism that from the time that a person dies until they're buried, you don't leave the body alone. So that's one level. The other level is that there's a religious spiritual view that the neshama, the soul, sort of hovers over the body, which it's been tied to all the years of life, until the body actually makes contact with the earth, at which point the soul is released to go wherever souls go.
The body the bodies were moved to large tents.
Because of the fact that there were body parts in 9/11, the DNA analysis necessary to identify who was who and who had died went on for 7 months. And these women were so committed to this project, not having the faintest idea who they were sitting shmira for, went in shifts, you know, for 7 months, making sure that there was someone reading or chanting or singing psalms and parts of the Torah throughout this period of time. And I thought, wow, you know, that's beautiful. You know, out of this horror, here's something really, really remarkable. So when the time came 9 years later to do the piece, I remembered that and I thought, I got to find these women. And I found two of them. Is not an isolated event that just sort of happened and there's nothing that ever happened before. I mean, so much has happened afterwards and is going on as we speak, you know, in all different parts of the world, that it was a sort of like the signpost, you know, over the whole planet saying, you know, here comes a whole new chapter in world history. When I interviewed every friend and every neighbor, I asked them one question, which never appears in the piece, which is, do you think this could happen again? And do you think it could happen again in New York? And everybody said, do I think it could happen again? It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. So, and of course, we know that, you know, the Times Square guy failed, but not because he didn't try. So there's an urgency to the topic that is not just reflecting back on an event which happened like a sort of a pillar that stands by itself. It's just a marker for a bunch of events that preceded and have continued to happen in abundance since.